Welcome to NetFront Presents. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter Matthew DeFranks, and it's go time, Matthew, in the NHL. The NHL draft is upon us. Free agency is upon us. So the Blues, not in the middle of a lot of things right now, but certainly there's going to be opportunity for Doug Armstrong in his final summer of being the hands-on, day-to-day general manager. So your take on where this team is, while a lot of activity is flying around, we're seeing trades ahead of the draft, we're seeing cap dumps, salary cap dumps, we're seeing some pretty significant trades, a lot of chatter about free agency. So where do you see the Blues right now?
Yeah, I look at the Blues right now and I see a team that's just kind of patiently waiting for an opportunity. That's kind of what Doug Armstrong mentions on Monday when he spoke to reporters was, you know, I think that the general overarching tone or theme of his address to the reporters was that they liked the way the season ended. They want the growth to continue with their young players. And, you know, they're like more or less content, and we'll try to add to that versus content and try to, you know, undo everything. So that's kind of the vibe that I got from him. I mean, obviously, we know he is still a very aggressive general manager, so his patience is different than other teams' patience, right? Like if we think about the last two summers, just those alone, you know, last year, obviously, it was a pretty quiet July 1. I mean, all they did was re-sign Kasperi Kapanen on, what, July 2, I think. And then they got the Buchnevich extension done. And so, like, those were kind of small moves. And then, boom, August comes, offer sheets, Holloway, Broberg. And then even the previous year, you know, 2023, the move that was vetoed by Tory Krug's no-trade clause, like, that would have been a big blockbuster deal, sending him a first and getting Sanheim back. So when I've thought about Doug Armstrong as being patient, as being content and kind of waiting for an opportunity, he's always responded with some sort of attempt to make an aggressive move. And so that's where I think the Blues are at right now, where they're still waiting. They're trying to see what's out there. And you know, Doug mentioned this on Monday, that you don't want to be a team that sets the market with the new cap and everything. So I wonder how much that that impacts the timing of things, when they're able to do things, or are they looking at other deals before those get done? And so, yeah, I mean, I think they liked the way the season ended. I think they wish it, or the regular season ended. Obviously, they wanted the playoff series to end differently, but, you know, we'll see what happens in this next week or two.
Now, it seems clear that they need to make at least one addition, and that would be to fortify themselves up front, middle six, preferably a center, to give them some time to develop, you know, Dalibor Dvorsky, Otto Stenberg. These guys are going to be continuing their progress. They need to do something there because they really did put a lot on Braden Schenn. They did, you know, mixing and matching, trying to figure out their middle six. They've got some pieces. They're probably one short in terms of getting that done and finding that right guy, as he's described it, a 200-foot player. And it's got to be in the right age bracket. So we're seeing guys like a Mason Marchman move, but he's older. He's a cap casualty in Dallas. Didn't really fit the age group. Might have wedged into the thought process had he been younger. But that's, I guess, that sort of guy who can play, take minutes, fill role, play both ends of the ice, and fit the age group. Nothing comes to mind. I think Maverick Bourque would have been that guy if Dallas didn't keep him, and you wanted to try to. He didn't really have offer sheet capability, but that would be the ideal sort of player, a guy that maybe is stuck someplace and who's younger. But I don't have any ideas about what would work there.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every team wants a center, right? I mean, even if you look at Florida, like they're trying to bring back their own center and Sam Bennett. Like every team wants a top six, middle six center. Because when you think about what the Blues looked like last year, Robert Thomas, absolute 1C, right? Radifoxa, absolute 4C. And in the middle there, I mean, Schenn, you could say he was a 2.5C. When Kyrou and Holloway were on his wings, they looked like a top six line. Like that was a legitimate line, right? But there are times in the previous few years where you're seeing him put up 45, 50 points, and you're thinking, is he better as a third line center? And the Blues have had that thought before too. I mean, this was a question going into last year. The big question was, who's their second line center? And their answer to start the season was Pavel Buchnevich. So, like, this is not a new question. They understand where they're at. I mean, even last year they tried Dylan Holloway at center. They tried Pavel Buchnevich at center. They understand this is a deficiency that they have, and it hasn't gone away. I mean, if your third line last year was Joseph, Sundquist, and Bolduc, like, that's not really a workable third line on a contending team that thinks they can win a playoff round or two, right? So it is an area of need. I would say in the short term, that is the primary area of need. In the long term, I think we can look at D and say, the ages there are dictating what that would be in the future. But yeah, you're right. I think in the short term, every team is looking for a center. And I think Mikhail Granlund in Dallas would be a decent addition if, the term and the money is right. And I think that feels silly to say, because that would go for any free agent if the term and the money is right. But he's at a point where he's still very productive. There are times where he was a top line player on that Dallas Stars team, playing wing with Roope Hintz and Mikko Rantanen. And if you can get him on a 2 or 2 year deal, three, he's probably looking for three plus. But if the Blues can get on a 2 year deal, give Dvorsky, as you said, time to mature and kind of slot guys correctly. Whereas if Faxa doesn't come back, you have Sundquist that you can move down to 4C and have a pretty viable fourth line center there. So yeah, it's a situation that I don't think it's new or unique to the Blues, but it is something that I think they do still want to address.
Yeah, and internally there just isn't. They're getting a great lift from Jimmy Snuggerud, and that's going to be a reason for optimism joining the group that was in place, the group that played well at the end of the year. And like I say, most of that group is coming back, so there's reason to feel good about his addition because he is an impact offensive player. But you get beyond that, and Zach Dean, who was supposed to be maybe a third line, third fourth line guy, loses a whole year to injury, so he's back. He's still back at square, whatever he is. It's unrealistic to think of him as an option. There just isn't a guy. They have some potential fourth line forwards at Springfield, but they don't really have that next guy. And there are guys in this draft that will eventually be possibly top six centers who could fall as low to the Blues, but that far down the first round. But like Doug Armstrong says, maybe you get a look at him in year three. More likely, they don't do much to help you till year four. Meanwhile, the Blues feel like they're in the chase.
Yeah, and just looking at their pipeline, like, Dvorsky is obviously the biggest name, and he plays center, and that is a big thing for this organization, having that type of talent there. But last year was year two after the draft. He played two NHL games, and I think if his development path had been different, had he been playing in Sweden and getting, if had he actually been like getting decent playing time in Sweden the last couple of years and never came over to North America, I think we would all be thinking about his development differently. But because 2 years ago he came over to Sudbury and he lit up the OHL, right? He was part of one of the best lines in the league in Sudbury. And then last year he's one of the youngest players in the AHL. Like, there's not 19-year-olds in the AHL. Like, that's just not something that happens normally. A lot of times, I mean, the 19-year-olds in the CHL aren't allowed to be there. The Europeans that are that young are typically still playing for European teams. So you have this very small subset of players that are European first round picks that come over early, and he was one of them. So he was one of the youngest players in the AHL last year. And if he had been, in Europe these 2 years and just now coming over, like Theo Lindstedt, or if he had been in junior for these 2 years, like Zach Bolduc, like, this would just be his first year pro in North American hockey, right? So it's not something that we would be thinking, oh, he's making the team as a second line center in his first year of professional hockey in North America. Like, that's not a realistic expectation. And I don't think the Blues have that expectation for him. They've been pretty pretty careful not to rush him at all in any of this, even when he was an all-star last year in the AHL and made the all-prospect team. Like, he had two games, and one of the games he got benched for basically the entire third period up in Edmonton. So that's not a slight on him. It's just saying he's not something that you can count on for sure as part of the solution for next year. And you looked at even further in their pipeline. You mentioned Dean, and who knows what he's going to be even when he is healthy, right? Like, we saw him a couple of years ago in the NHL, and bottom six guy, probably needed a little more jam to his game. And we'll see where he's at in the fall, coming back from an injury. But Otto Stenberg is a winger. Juraj Pekarčík is a winger. Like, you have Koskimaki and Peterson down there, and they played wing in the AHL last year. So it's a lot of guys who are on the wing, besides Dvorsky. And when you think about the draft coming up, and you think about where the pipeline needs are, last year the Blues needed some defensemen, and they went out and got three defensemen with their top three picks, and Juracek, Ralph, and Fisher. And this year you wonder where are the centers really, and how can they get more of them.
Yeah, they've got now. There are guys who do play center who will, if the draft lists are correct, the projections will fall to them. But no near-term solution, people, obviously. So I would be surprised if they didn't take a center just because there's plenty of them there, and it wouldn't be changing dramatically, deviating from your scouting grade to take one, given the way it looks like a lot. Because a D-man typically will go quicker if they're higher end. I'm kind of guessing they're going to get a guy, but that's great. And then what? The possibility that if there's a guy who's stuck somewhere who's closer to playing and a team wants to move a one, wants to take a one to move out a guy that's stuck somewhere in their organization who might play more readily, it seemed like Doug was open to that. If there is that guy, it's got to be the right age group, of course, and a guy with some utility. I think that might be optimal, but I don't know again if that guy exists out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he does exist, but he's in the wrong market, right? Like Marco Rossi. I don't know if Minnesota wants to sell low on their player who is playing top line minutes throughout the season and send him to a division rival. I don't know if that is really a move that Bill Guerin would enjoy doing. So I think the player would exist there, but it's not really something where I think I can see the two teams going out and working out a deal like that.
It is interesting that Rossi, it's a case where, and Guerin's a pretty bold guy. He's got cap room, but he's still looking at a guy like, okay, we like the player. Obviously, they've utilized the player, especially when there were injuries. He played important minutes, but the belief may not be at the level where his pay is going to go based on the rising cap, his production, his age, so on and so forth. And rather than do an overpay, it looks like Minnesota might be trying to act on the desperation of other teams looking for a center to do something. So it's just interesting that his name would be out there, where apparently there may not, that the Wild may not be sold on him as a core piece.
Yeah, and it was puzzling to see his playoff usage and how they went about that. And I don't know, like, this is a first round pick, top 10 pick from just 5 years ago, who's been a full-time NHLer the last 2 years, 60-point guy last year. And I think we can look at the deal that JJ Paterka signs yesterday with Utah after the trade, and 5 years, 7.7 for a 70-point winger. This we're looking at a 60-point center, a little different. So is yeah, I think it's been reported that Rossi wanted $7 million. Is that really out of the question when we're looking at the production and the positional differences, and guys that were drafted in the same draft class or the same age? Like, it doesn't seem all that unwieldy.
Well, and this is a topic that Doug Armstrong discussed earlier this week about, the cap's going up and it's going up and it's going up and it's going up. And that's impacting any contract that is out there now for that's coming up for both term and number. It's and that's just a reality. It's two things. One, all those Blues contracts are going to age nicely, and even the defense, the contracts on the blue line that people complain so much about, he pointed out that if you try to replace Colton Parayko, it might cost you $11, $12 million. You think, hey, that's crazy, but then you look at Noah Dobson, who was awful last year, awful. And he wants $11 or $12 million, and he was
Was he on your
awful.
fantasy team, Dorto? Was he
He
on your fantasy team? Is that what
was. He kind of was. Well, he went from 70 points to 39. And he wants $11 to $12 million, right? And he's, as an RFA. So you can see where salaries are going, right? And so it's crazy. Like, so yeah, two good, it's good news, bad news for the Blues, man. All these contracts look a lot better, particularly the Thomas and Kyrou. People are never going to stop whining about Kyrou. and he is what he is, but you look at all the guys who are going to start making more than him. And the list will be long by the time that contract's over. And unfortunately for the Blues, that means if you're going to do some shopping, it's going to be pricey.
Yeah, the cap increase, I think it affects the Blues in two ways that I can think about right now. Obviously, it affects every team, but right now, the Blues have mostly used it already. They gave Pavel Buchnevich a raise of 2.2 million, I believe. Gave Jake Neighbors a raise of almost 3 million. Joel Hofer is going to be due a raise of probably about $1.5 to $2 million, and that's where the increase is, right? You add all that up, and boom, there's the increase done on raises that way. And so, while other teams may have more room to work with because they don't have these type of players to extend, it's not a situation for the Blues where they have that right now. And secondly, I look at a team like the Blues and know and understand how they've done contracts in the past, and you can look at the numbers and they kind of set internal caps, right? That's why when you had, I think Pietrangelo at the time was making 6.5, and then Parayko was making 6.5, and then Falk was making 6.5, and Krug was making 6.5. It's clear they set a limit and say, like, that's our best player, not going past that. I think even with Thomas and Kyrou at 8.125, you can look at the negotiations with Buchnevich from last year, and I get it. They're very different contracts from UFA years to RFA years and all of that, but I don't think it's an accident that he ended up below them just in terms of pure cap hit. So teams like that who want to use their own players as comps for each other and say you're not going to go past that number because you're not going to get paid more than him. Like, that's just something that's going to be of the past, I think. And I think about in Minnesota's case in particular, like Matt Boldy, he made 7 million, and that's a relatively new contract, and he's put up much better numbers than Rossi. And so I can understand the Wild saying, hey, like, this guy has been so much better. He's signed at this number at a relatively recent contract. That's not a number that we would entertain with you, but that's just going to have to be thinking of the past with the way that the cap is rising so steadily, right? It doesn't feel like teams are going to be able to stick to that sort of thing. And yeah, I mean, I think it's something that we'll see how it impacts the market. Like, we'll see what Bowen Byram signs for. We'll see what Noah Dobson signs for, and then we'll see what the market is like for Philip Roberg after that, right? Like, that's something that Doug Armstrong mentioned, is that he didn't want to be a team that sets the market, particularly with the cap going up as drastically as it is. And you wonder what these players are going to ask for and what the teams are going to agree to. How does that impact everything? And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. As far as Dobson, I think, I look at his underlyings from the last few years, and I think he's had a pretty good impact on what the Islanders are able to do just in terms of controlling attempts and shots on goal, chances, expected goals, all that stuff. And I understand that's not the end all be all, but he is a former 70-point guy that's 25 years old that will want a lot of money, as you mentioned, Gordo. And so this is might be a new reality that the teams have to live with is what is palatable for a guy of that stature or of that age.
Yeah, and you look at his buddy Romanov, who's a not the offensive player, but certainly logs tough minutes. Is a guy at the right age. A lot of teams are coveting him. It's almost like the Islanders have to choose between those two to go forward. They're likely to draft a defenseman first overall, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But we'll see where does Romanov's numbers go, and then some of the older D-men, like the that are out there. You've got guys that are, the Gavrikovs of the world who are older guys but have some mileage left. Where is the money going for those guys? It's going to be it's going up. And that, and the thing about Doug mentioning and stressing player development, and that's going to be the key going forward. It is really going to be the key going forward because the cap allowed them to compete by it being frozen for so long. And boy, it's going to take more than redesigning a sweater to generate the revenue needed down the road when we're talking 4 or 5 years from now to play in that in that on that playground.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that stood out to me from what Doug was saying on Monday was he was asked about the D-Corps and how he felt about them, and his answer was it was pretty funny when I think about it. He's like, yeah, our top four, Fowler, Parayko, Broberg, Falk, is it the best in the league? No. Is it above average? Probably. And could I improve on Parayko? Yeah, but it would take what, 10, 11 million, $12 million. Like it shows to me that he's thought about that at least, right? It's like, okay, yeah, what would it take to get better on defense? And it's a 10, 11, $12 million player. So I wonder how much that factors into his thinking.
Yeah, he'd better hope all those young D-men develop, or Alexander Steen should hope that all those young D-men develop. All right, here before we wrap up, or as we wrap up on this edition of Net for Our Presence, let's just talk for a minute about the belle of the ball, the guy that won't sign on July 1, but will and really won't hold the market captive because he is the market. He is the show. Mitch Marner. Man, a lot of intrigue there because a lot of teams want in on that. LA Kings, Anaheim Ducks, Carolina Hurricanes. Of course, Vegas will, if they have to kill a couple players to create cap space, they'll do whatever, right? I mean, it's just they're a little cold-blooded. So where do you think Mitch ends up? I mean, it's going to be fascinating. He clearly wants out of Toronto, and he's not afraid to go to, I think, to a team that will need some building if he gets paid. And what will that pay look like? Are we looking at $14, $15 million? I mean, he's going to go past where Etten, and I think because Mikko was on a good team in a no tax state, I think he was happy where he signed. Mitch could go further than that.
Yeah, it's been odd to watch the Marner reporting across the last few weeks because it seems like it doesn't really matter what style of team you are. Like you might be Anaheim, you're in a rebuild with a new coach, and you're trying to get back in it and win now, or you could be Vegas or Dallas, Western contenders with zero cap space. And you could be Carolina, who tried to get him earlier and finally needs a star and is in the Eastern Conference. Like it doesn't matter what kind of team you are, you could be in this Marner sweepstakes, right? Like I think when I read about the report, I'm like, how is Dallas going to do this? Why would Marner go to Anaheim and go from a team that's consistently made the playoffs and hasn't found success there, but at least they're there, right? Like. Why would he go to Anaheim and Carolina could finally use a star that's someone above Sebastian Aho's stature. Like it just seems like there's a lot of different types of teams in the running, and I don't know where he's gonna go. I have no idea, and obviously I think he can help any team. He's a very skilled player. I think his defensive side, his defensive metrics are pretty close to top of the league. As a winger, especially, he's a 100-point guy. Like this is a guy who's one of the best players in the league. That I think he gets a bad rep for the Leafs playoff failures, I guess, for lack of a better word. But this is a skilled guy, and I'm interested to see where he goes and what type of market it is, what type of team it is, and And as you mentioned, what the number ends up being.
All right, that's Matt DeFranks. I'm Jeff Gordon. This has been the Net Front Presence. A reminder that you can get all of our podcasts, all of our extra content, the videos, the extra written word, all the stuff, extra stuff we do on the digital edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. That's over at stltoday.com. If you're catching this little, if you're catching any of this anywhere else, just come back to our site and check out all this cool stuff we're doing. So we'll be back a little bit later this summer as we address what happens with the Blues or doesn't happen as they go forward. Until next time, for Matt, I'm Jeff. See you later.